conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved with punk, but had their life changed by the genre punk in a major way. And today on the show, one of the biggest punk rockers I know, Scott Punk Rock Vogel himself, from the band Terror, from the band Despair, from the band Slugfest, Cinderblock, from Fade Away, from Buried Alive. The list goes on and on. Probably most famous for his punk band Manic Depression, but more on that in 1 second. First, if you want to get in touch with me, head over to the email address turnoutapunkpodcast@gmail.com. That is run by my brother and show producer and guest booker extraordinaire, Tristan Abraham, and he will get the message to me. You can also find me on various forms of social media at Left for Damien. Support the show by telling all your friends about it, letting everyone know that you know that we have this podcast where we talk about punk rock with people like Scott Vogel. This is actually Scott's second appearance on the show. I should have said that off the top, but I'm just so excited to put over the fact about his love of punk rock. So, that's how you can spread the word. You can also subscribe to it and rate it on the platform that you're listening to this thing on, or head over to turnedoutapunk.com and grab a t-shirt for the show. I play in a band. We're called Fucked Up. You can find out more information about tour dates and upcoming record releases over at fuckedup.cc. We've got a bunch of stuff coming out, a couple new records that should be hitting shelves soon. Talk about it with Scott in a second, so might as well spoil it here too. And that's that. All right, on to today's show. Today on the show, my buddy, my pal, Scott Vogel is back for a part two. Very excited about this one. Scott's episode, his part one, is one of the best episodes. If you have not heard this thing, go back and listen to it. It's one of the early episodes. It's in the second year of the show. I think it's episode 60, around there. And you'll hear Scott and I have a great time hanging out with each other in Toronto. I love going on tour with him and playing shows with him and just being at shows with Scott. He's a fun guy to hang out with, and you will hear that here on this podcast. His band Terror is constantly on the road. They are currently in Europe playing shows all over the place. I don't know where they're playing tonight. They're playing in the Garage in London, I believe, coming up. Find out more information on Terror on any social media platform. Scott Vogel himself is also on social media. Terror have a brand new record called Pain Into Power, available now on Pure Noise Records. Fantastic record. Definitely recommend picking it up. Definitely recommend going to see this band live whenever you can. And that's about it. I'm not going to ramble on anymore. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Scott Vogel on Turned Out a Punk. Scott, welcome back to the show.
You were one of the first podcasts I ever did. Do you remember this?
Oh my gosh, yes. I actually, it has remained one of my favorite and I think a lot of people's favorite episodes ever of the show.
Stop lying, please.
I just re-listened to it today and I'm like, this is amazing. And I'm like now worried how we're going to even compare. You know, this is going to be like all the sequels.
I remember I was a little buzzed after our show somewhere in Canada.
Yeah.
In the van.
Yep. In Toronto.
And all right.
We were both exhausted.
What was the year? Oh, is this when we were touring together?
No. It was after that. This would have been, I think, the second year of the show. So 2015?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It was a long time ago.
Time flies, my friend.
Time does fly, but now we are back and, even outside of the podcast, you're one of my favorite people to talk to and bug and punish and the like. So, now we get to do it on recording again. I guess I've never done this on a podcast before, but how's tour?
It's been really good. I mean, we're on tour the last day, so it's like day 22. So that aspect is, and we're all older now, so everyone's very much looking forward to being done.
Yeah.
But it's been, we have a new record out. So that always gives a little burst of life to the band. And honestly, show wise aside, the vibe within the band is really good. Everyone's really happy. And, there's definitely been tours where everyone's kind of miserable and staying away from each other and drunk and hungover and not getting stuff done and shit like that. But the vibe in the actual band is really good. And that makes the whole thing just go much smoother.
I definitely found that with even my band after COVID kind of coming back to it, having to stop, I think everyone's a little more appreciative of it.
Yeah, I think that, and obviously we've toured so much to get, like you're saying, to have a break from each other. You get on each other's nerves after so much time, but now that we've got to spend some time apart, it like you're saying, it's actually like nice to be back.
Everyone's got new stories to tell.
And we still got Toronto's finest, Jordan Posner.
I know. He actually, I've been trying, because like it wasn't supposed to be this long between our episodes. I've been trying to do an episode with you and him, but he's ducking.
Oh, please. I somehow, some way, like get him on the show, and then all of a sudden me and Ben Cook pop up and he'll just hang up.
It'll be a run in and he'll hang up. He'll duck out of the ring and roll the floor. I gotta say though, since we talked, I feel like you are a champion of the city, but there has been a Buffalo renaissance, a cultural renaissance in Buffalo.
Yeah. I don't want to downplay LA or take anything away from my time there, but I'm so happy I moved back. It's the city, everyone talks about the winter, but I'll take a winter and snow over heat any day. Like we were just in Texas. I'm in Arizona. It's, I think, 97 out today. We played outside in Dallas the other day and it was fucking hell. I don't mind the winter. I'm not a beach guy. I definitely don't want big crowds of people or Hollywood life. So to be back in Buffalo, it's beautiful. It's cheap. Obviously the whole Griselda thing has given shine to Buffalo. And the hardcore scene, there's really good bands. The scenes, I think I'm a little bit spoiled because I remember Buffalo when I lived there before and the scene was big. Like, a smaller show would be 200 people. A bigger show could be, like Shelter would be like 600 people. It's Quicksand. Anybody, even like some of the low snap case, like we would big shows. Now some shows are like 50 people, 100 people. So that's not to say it's bad because the people that are there are great and the bands are great. So, and also LA is so fun. The scene is so big. Oh, every show is so big. So it's a little readjusting for me and I don't want to take the attitude of like, where is everyone? Because you gotta deal with what you got and make it better. But yeah, I love being back and the city's awesome. And I'll tell people it's the greatest place on earth and most people just laugh at me, but that's okay.
Yeah, like it feels, and obviously the Griselda thing being huge, but I think also like, the Butcher and the Blade in wrestling. Like there's a lot of stuff that's popping off, from that city. And I've always loved going to Buffalo. Like to me, it's always been, well, it's the home of the hits, it's like where you're from. It's where like, Snapcase were from. Like to me, it was always like, that was like my New York, I guess, I guess Detroit too, cause we were so close to Detroit. So we'd hear a lot of stuff about Cold as Life and stuff. But like, for me, it was Buffalo hardcore or Tuffalo. Who coined Tuffalo?
My guess is Rat Boy, maybe Andy Williams.
Okay.
Speaking of the Butcher and the Blade, but the first time I remember it is Rat Boy, who was the original, maybe the OG drummer of Every Time I Die. I think he's the original drummer. He created Tuffalo Fest. I think this thing in between in my skull here is pretty shot. So anything I say is subject to correction, but I'm going to say Rap Boy.
You just make more legend every time, though, Scott. Like, it just makes it, like, you know. What about, like, was Steve Titus? Because I remember, was it in his zine back then, too?
I don't remember Steve Titus having a zine, but I will tell you this.
He did, I think, write for Hello, My Name Is, which I'm holding in my hand.
That's Mark Miller. That's Mark Miller.
He has a column
in it.
He's
a columnist in there?
Yeah.
Who is that on the cover? Was that Joe Orlando?
I think on this one, maybe.
With the bass?
We can go through all the covers if you want. I think I have everything but the first issue.
That's the dude from Plagued with Rage. That's Garlip and Mark Miller.
And then on the...
Who's that? Like Los Crudos or something?
The singer of Hyrax.
Out of My Realm.
And then, and look at this. Look at the flyer on the back of this. Apocalypse 97. Look at this lineup. Despair, Envy, Buffalo Union, No Reason, Buffalo Lockjaw. I don't know X Pride X. I don't remember them. And Counter-Strike.
Can I break some things down on this?
Break it down for us.
Well, back to Steve Titus. On this tour, so let's say 3 weeks ago, we played in Buffalo. He was at the show. A lot of people came out of the, I don't want to say came out of the woodwork, but that I haven't seen in a while were there. He was one of them. He's a chef now. He looked good. He looked strong. He looked healthy. I did not see him in the mosh pit, but maybe, maybe he was. X Pride X was this dude, Jeff, who, do you know that the Buffalo podcast, Nickel City podcast?
I've listened to a couple episodes. Yeah.
If you ever need a good podcast, listen to his. It's Jeff from Pride.
Yeah.
He has a great personality and was told great stories. And he's also now a fuck, man. He like is like an animal guy that has like animals crawling on him. And he's on like late night shows with like birds and things on his arms. I don't know what you call this, but that's his job. And he's, who's the late night guy that has the Roots as his backing band?
Jimmy Fallon.
He's been on that show and he met the Roots and he loves Gangstar. So,
whoa. So he's like the new, what was that guy? Steve Irwin, right?
Yes. Whatever. So he's probably seen some people got bit. Maybe he's got some lawsuits, but okay. That was Pride. Now what I know about that show is, does it have a date? Is it like the summer of 96?
It's Apocalypse 97, July 23rd. Yeah. 1997. Okay. I assume.
I thought it was 96. That was, let's call it the final show of the Despair Hatebreed summer tour. We did a tour through the whole U.S. I think it was like 6 weeks. The tour ended in Salt Lake, I want to guess, somewhere in, like way on the West Coast, not California, though. And that show got booked, and we drove like 24 hours, 48 hours straight from, let's just say, Salt Lake to that show. That's how fucking crazy we were. And I would still do that again. So I'm still that crazy. Fuck it.
Well, that kind of brings up an interesting thing. Like, I wanted to talk to you about Despair because we kind of ended the last episode just as Despair was kind of getting going. You know, and the rumor I remember hearing around this time was that Despair was going to sign to Victory, you know, and you mentioned being on tour with Hatebreed. That's before Hatebreed had signed to Victory. But it feels like, you know, like Despair, you know, just missed what would have been like a perfect time for Despair to have put out a record on Victory Records. You know, like it would have been timed around, you know, Satisfaction of the Death of Desire and Blood for Blood and sort of this whole wave and this return of sort of like heavy hardcore, which Buried Alive, you know, gets into later on, but like Despair would have been there at the perfect time for it.
Yeah, this is I'll give you a long answer because there's a lot of details involved here. So on that tour, we played in Chicago. And at that time, for a band like Despair, Victory would have been the perfect home. Snapcase was already on Victory. So they had like, you know, a connection to Buffalo. I remember we played in a VFW. I'm sure Jim Grimes booked the show. Tony was there. I remember he watched our whole set. And Chicago was a place that was always good to Despair. And we had a really good set. And I remember we covered Judge. I can't remember what song, but I remember he just like shook his head and left the room. Like, I think if I was reading him correctly, he's like, you don't need a cover. You have your own songs. This is childish. And he left the room. Obviously, Hatebreed on that tour was just like, they had the demo out. They had the Under the Knife 7-inch out. I don't think, maybe the split with Integrity, maybe not.
No, that and came later, were, I think Neglect maybe or something.
Maybe. And they were just this, they were like, and this is before the internet. So it's just like word of mouth. Like, what is Hatebreed? Oh, it's the heaviest band in the world. They're the biggest assholes in the world. They're the hardest, meanest. They're going to kill you. And then they would show up and be the heaviest, biggest assholes and put on the craziest show. And you never heard a hardcore band tune that low and play that hard. And everywhere we went, whether it was either 70 kids or 300 kids, they just destroyed, they floored everybody. Hmm. So at the Chicago show, I'm sure that's what happened to Tony. Anyways, the end. So towards the end of that tour where I was just talking about, we played in Riverside, California. Strife booked the show. It was a great, great fucking show. It was Strife, Hatebreed, Despair. And it was supposed to be Spawn from Germany, but they didn't play the show. They're on the flyer though. At that show, Tony Victory flew out to the show. He literally signed Hatebreed right there. And he offered Despair to do a 7-inch. And we said, yes, of course. So after that, we drove to Buffalo, like I just told you. We played that show. We had a little time off. We went to Europe. And that was the demise of the band. In Europe, like maybe touring 2 months back or two, maybe 3 months back to back. At the end of the tour, two people quit the band. And that was it. And so the Victory thing just went in the garbage. I'm sure, I can't remember, but I'm sure I was like heartbroken. Like my band was going to be so awesome on the amazing Victory Records. And now we just ruined it. But that's kind of why when, you know, whatever, a year later, whatever, 6 months later, Buried Alive got together. I already had that relationship with them. I sent them the demo and they were into it right away and put the 7-inch out right away. So that's why that kind of came together so quickly, because that was like kind of in place, if that's the right term.
Yeah. It's, you know, we talked about this last time, but it's like you and Chris Colley, I find very similar, you know, and obviously with Terror, you found a stable band, and hopefully with Sect, Chris has found kind of a stable band, but you guys are like these lifers that, you know, are going to make your art no matter what, but, kind of have to, you know, keep finding new ways to do it each time. And, you know, it's sort of like the rug being pulled out from underneath you.
Yeah. I mean, since you brought him up, he's a fucking amazing human being and I love him and look forward to any time I see him. I think he's the only person that still calls me Scott Slugfest sometimes, which I'm totally fine with that. And I think it's really cool. He's got like a discography of bands that there's no like big holes in it, or he didn't do this weird like costume change where he like became a different person. He's just like very set in his ways and always does it his way, and people really appreciate that. As for me, all my bands up to Terror would just like, excuse me, get a little bit of momentum, and then, you know, whether it was people got girlfriends and they didn't want to do it, they wanted college, they didn't like touring, they didn't like how crazy I was and I was too much of an asshole, all the bands just broke up. Somehow with fucking Terror, I never saw this coming, that we were gonna, dude, it's been fucking 20, what's the year? It's been 20 years. It's fucking insane. It's insane.
Yeah, I remember Mike and I living in our house together, right around Fucked Up forming, and ordering the first 7-inch, multiple copies. And there was one that came with like no stamp on it. And there was a big fight over who got that one. Like, that's the other thing. Like, Despair is such a huge influence on such Fucked Up.
We'll get to that in 1 second, but you're such a record collector. It's insane.
Like, dude, look at this.
You would hate the things that have gone through my hands that I'm just like, just give it to this. I hate it too, but I've had so many records that I don't even know where they went. I just don't care.
But to me, I obviously can't stop myself from collecting stuff, but it's also a burden. You know, like this stuff like weighs so much on me. Like, should I just sell it? Like, should I get rid of it? You know, like what's the point in like Because then, you know, like having had to clean out my mom's house when she passed away, like eventually your possessions become someone else's burden. And I got a whole lot of fucking burden for people.
Have you seen Kitzel's record collection?
No, but I've heard stories that it's pretty spectacular.
Yeah, I lived with him for, let's say, a year. He would get records in the mail every day, boxes and boxes of records. And to his credit, he would listen to every single one of them and then archive it or whatever. Yeah. And Jordan has always told me that Mike is like a real Despair fan, which is
absolutely huge.
Surprising.
Huge. No, I don't like if you like, obviously, I don't think our new 12 inch that's coming out. I'll send you the songs on it so you can hear that, because I think maybe the crunch is there a little bit more. But
really,
yeah, Mike wore the Despair crunch shirt, I'm going to say, for like a good 6 years straight, like it's his only t-shirt. But then he like, you know, you guys, they saw you before, cause you played the 360 before that. I was away when that show happened. But then Despair came, and I think you guys did, it was already announced that you were breaking up. Cause I think you did the two last shows. You did Toronto on the day before New Year's and then Buffalo on New Year's or something for the last Despair shows. And I think it was like the last Despair shows, how it was promoted.
Huh?
That would be New Year's of 97.
I think the last Despair show in Buffalo was at the Mercury Theater with like Earth Mover and maybe, man, I don't fucking know.
That's a sick band though. Earth Mover.
Yeah. They sure are. Sure were.
Yeah. They were, you know, they were another band that around that time when hardcore started getting, heavier again, you know, it was almost like post the initial sort of Youth Crew revival when people started wanting like, you know, like harder stuff.
I wanted the harder stuff.
You always did, but you also love the soft stuff.
I know. Like, did you see Elliot's playing in St. Catharines or something?
Yeah, dude. The Alexa on Fire. They're doing the Alexa on Fire tour too with them.
Yeah, dude. I won't be around. It fucking pisses me off.
You know how you're going to be on tour?
Yeah, somewhere. I checked. I keep seeing Elliot shows. Elliot is a band Chris Higdon and Falling Forward and Elliot is some music I fucking love. If it was Falling Forward, yeah, if it was Falling Forward, then we'd have a real problem. I've seen Elliot enough to get my fill, but they're a band I would travel for, but they keep dates keep popping up and I can't land one where I'm going to go. Now, I've said for years, one of the only bands I've never seen that I really want to see is Sunny Day Real Estate. I think I'm going to go see him in Cleveland. Now, I'll keep saying I'm going to go see him in Cleveland, but will I really pull the trigger, drive down there and go? I hope so, but there's always a chance I fail.
Well, that's the thing. You love like emo stuff. I guess like the classic kind of terminology of emo.
Lifetime, Texas the Reason, Sunny Day Real Estate, Sam I Am, Rival Schools, anything Walter does, that's and even now, like Citizen, that's like what I listen to more than anything. It's not Madball, Hatebreed. I still listen to that stuff, but usually I'll go for something a little more mellow.
But like, what is it about that stuff in particular? Because you also, and we didn't even really get into this last time, but you kind of hate punk.
please don't put this out to the world.
No, but you made it perfectly clear that you kind of like don't like punk, but like the stuff you're bringing up to me, like everything we're talking about from E-Town Concrete to the Manic Depression demo, you know, like that's all punk to me. But like I know for you there's like stuff that's cool, like I don't mean cool like cool, I mean stuff you like, and then stuff that you're like, no, that's no place for this.
All right, let me try to break all this down. So when I first got into music, it was all because of my brother. And he was really into punk, looking, listening. So I've gone to a lot of punk shows. One of the first shows, Dead Milkmen was one, maybe the first show I went to. And I like them.
They're amazing. That is awesome.
Big Lizard in My Backyard. That's an album, right?
Yeah, well, and that's Tom DeLonge's first show. Like, they were a lot of people's first show, I think, or first shows.
So that's my first time to the River Rocks seeing them. Social Distortion, Mommy's Little Monster, great record. Group Sex, great record.
But that's a hardcore record, Group Sex.
Chill out, bro. Come on.
What? I don't think it's a hardcore.
That's a hardcore record?
That's a hardcore record, dude.
In Toronto, not in Buffalo.
Maybe not in Tuffalo, I guess.
You're gonna say Black Flag's a hardcore record too. To me, that Damage, that's punk. So that's like Descendants. If that's like poppy to me, but if that's punk, I like that. But a lot of that stuff, any of the like Bad Religion stuff, no thank you. Like the whole Epitaph world, no thank you. My brother, who is so into punk, he's like kind of pushed me in the direction of the newer Exploited stuff that's really heavy. So pretty cool.
Only new Exploited stuff.
Right.
What about the Buzzcocks?
I don't know what that is. I think that's like UK kind of like skinheady. No, I don't know.
It's like power pop. It's like super catchy, melodic. No,
I don't know.
What about Superchunk?
I like Super Touch.
Have you heard? I think you'd like Superchunk.
See, some of the stuff I might like, but no thanks.
What about this tape right here? The Manic Depression. Know what?
Did we talk about how I played a show with them?
You told us last time that you played drum for it, and I told you I had the demo, and I wanted to show you that there's no lie there.
So this is stuff I'll never remember, but my brother has a really good memory, and he'll tell you that I played a show for them. And if you know me, that's, you know, that I played for them is kind of whatever. But they were on the Buffalo podcast, and they asked them, and I think they were like, nah, I don't remember that. So maybe I didn't play a show with them.
Oh, wow. Okay. Myth busting yourself right there. So what about like Avail and stuff like that? Do you like Avail? Because they kind of sound like Hot Water Music E, you know?
Before you said the Hot Water Music word, I was going to say Hot Water Music likes them, so I like them. But I don't know.
Leatherface?
Same. Same answer. I like the Bouncing Souls lyrics.
Yeah.
They got some good lyrics, but it's a little too, I don't know. I got hardcore. I got like post-hardcore, emo shit, hip hop, classic rock. I got enough. I don't need punk.
Do you like Fugazi though? Like any of that kind of era?
No. Fugazi came to Buffalo. I love Minor Threat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fugazi came to Buffalo for the first time and walked off stage because people were stage diving. That, like, not even because of the whole more stage dive Scott Vogel stupidity, but back then I was like watching Another State of Mind. That was what I knew about Minor Threat, the insanity. Then they come to Buffalo and try to tell everyone, and they walked off stage. I was like, get out of my life.
Were you one of the divers?
I don't think so. Okay. I hope so. I don't think so, but sure.
Speaking of infamous shows, you mentioned Shelter earlier. Were you at that Shelter riot show?
I was, but I wasn't there for the insanity. What was it like members of Chokehold in the van with, I think
someone was like, doing an interview with them, right? Or something when it started kicking off.
Yeah. So I know the venue. I drive when I go to Dunkin' Donuts every day. I drive past Randall's studio on Main Street. And it was a really big venue. Like I was saying earlier, Buffalo, like the scene was so fucking big. So, I know the story. I was at the show, but I wasn't there for the, insanity. That's also, we talked about Tony Victory before this, not part of the podcast.
Correct? We did talk a little bit about when you said we got signed to it, but we didn't talk about the Awake 7-inch that I have with the letter from Tony Victory in it.
The first time I met Tony Victory, I was booking a show at Randall's. I didn't book many shows in my life, but I did book a show there, and it was like local bands, and I got Snapcase the headline, and he must have flown into for the show, and I can't remember exactly what happened, but there wasn't really guest lists at that time. That didn't really exist. And he came to the show expecting to get in for free. And I was like, no. And then probably let him in because he was pretty intimidating. He looked crazy, shaved head, like a big, I remember it was in the winter. But I remember my first thing with Tony Vecchio was I wouldn't let him to the show. And he was appalled by that.
It was probably like $4 too.
Yeah, probably $5.
Like, it's really not that much, Tony. That kind of like, I think that was your first warning sign maybe.
Yes. I still, you know, I have a good relationship with him. And he's, you know, I won't say he's done everything perfect in life, but by me, he's always been good to me. And, all, you know, my band's never sold enough records to like get all up in arms about royalties and stuff like that. So I have a good relationship with him. He's fucking crazy though, but maybe that's why we can talk to each other.
Well, and also an amazing lead singer. Even Score is fucking sick.
Hell yeah. Agreed.
Did they ever roll through Buffalo or no? I don't think they toured much.
No, I know. I've never seen him on stage, but if I ever want to, I'll open that Only the Strong comp pictures where the club blitz photos of Even Score, or maybe then it was Life Cycle, and they look so fucking cool.
Yeah. I've heard Chicago was an incredibly hairy scene historically, and there were some like real wild kind of like tough people kind of hanging around shows there. What were shows like, early shows you went there like?
This isn't Chicago, but one of my first memories of Chicago was this ties back to your area too. Slugfest, Earth Crisis, and Chokehold played a show in Detroit at like the Coffee Grind. It was like this coffee. For anyone that knows Chicago history, they had like a coffee spot on a campus and they did shows. That dude, Eric Z, did the shows there. Now does like a skateboard company or some sort of
Element,
skateboard
thing, right?
Yes. So this was just meeting Earth Crisis, you know, the All Out War 7-inch came out. They came to Tim Redman's house and stayed the night. And then we kind of carpooled together and met Chokehold there and had like a, you know, that's a pretty fucking cool lineup for, let's say, 92, 93. I don't know what year it was. But my first intro, you know, this is no internet. No one knows anyone. No one talks to anybody. All you know is fanzines. You see pictures of shows in different cities. And at that show, about like 20 kids rolled in with all Chicago straight edge varsity jackets and all the, you know, they look pretty fucking cool and intimidating. And that's like my first introduction to seeing Chicago was like all these kids with varsity jackets, all Chicago straight edge. They had like 10 zines for sale there. And then after that show, Slugfest was in all those zines next episodes, cause I'm sure they all took pictures. So that's my first memory of Chicago hardcore.
I want to do a book of just Slugfest interviews because I have over 100.
Please don't. Please don't do that.
See if Shining Life Press will put out the Slugfest interview anthology book.
Please put those in the garbage can.
It's funny too, because like it's one of the few places that, you know, like now everyone's documented their whole life, but like punk is one of the, you know, before this was one of the few places that you like, you do an interview at like 16 years old and some kid's going to bring it up to you like 12 years later or like 5 years later, be like, hey, look at what you said, God, when you were a kid.
I can't even imagine the stuff I said. Ugh.
You did a zine though, right?
Many.
Yeah.
Back when I was in Buffalo, I had a zine called Deception that was only one issue and had ZT on the cover, of course. But the zine I did the most back then was Living Fanzine with Joe Luca, who was mostly known for being in Copper. And he started the zine. It was a Living Skate zine. And he was like the only other hardcore kid in my high school with me and my brother. And then after a little bit, me and him did, I don't know, like 6 or 7 issues. And it was super focused on hardcore. He was like vegan and we would do the zine on a typewriter in his basement, make falafel, go to Kinko's, print out the zine, sell it at shows. And then down the line, we kind of lost our way. I was partying more. He went super Krishna and did a couple more without me. But that was the zine that I am most, my zine memories go doing Living with Joe Luca. And that's another thing about moving back to Buffalo. Like, I hadn't talked to him in like, I don't know, 20 years. And then we reconnected on the almighty Instagram, and we would talk a lot. And I swear to God, when I moved back to Buffalo, within a fucking week, I went to Target. I'm fucking rolling a cart down the hall or the fucking aisle. Me and him just walk right into each other. I was like, holy shit. And now we have like a little, we haven't done it in a while since music's been, I've been busier. But when I was home, we would meet at Delaware Park and we just go for walks and talk shit. And like, that was like our old man routine. And actually we got fucking Mark from Zero Tolerance. He met us and took a walk with us once. So Garrett came once. So we have a little walking club.
That's awesome. You know, the from stage diving clubs to walking clubs.
What a world.
What were the early Connecticut shows like when you played Connecticut? You know, mentioned being on tour with Hatebreed. That's another place where you have some pretty wild shows back then.
If you look in the, I think it's the Under the Knife CD version, there's like a base, a little, one of those little baseball bats and blood all over the floor somewhere. That was a show that Despair played with Hatebreed. I don't know if it was from the tour or just another show, but violent, crazy. I mean, but you know, Buffalo danced hard, but we didn't have like these super intimidating hard asses, I would say. Mm-hmm. But when you went to places more like Boston, Connecticut, even like Newburgh, like the All Out War area and stuff like that, the people got a little bit bigger and a little bit meaner. And kind of like when Mike Trance, do you know Mike Trance?
I don't think so.
No. So he's a Troy Core kid, and he went to school at Buff State. So when he came to Buffalo, it was like, who the fuck is this? And how does he possibly dance this hard? And I better become friends with him before he kills me.
Yeah.
And another funny Connecticut story is Despair. I probably bought a shitty van for like $500. We played a show at the Bristol skate park. And after the show, the van wouldn't start. So I took the plates off, gave the keys to Josta. We rented a U-Haul, drove home in that. And I think Josta thought he was going to like get whatever fixed on it and have a van. He was like, dude, this thing is beat and just had to get, I think he had to pay money to get it towed because it had to get it out of the parking lot. But that, you know, we were talking about that. Vans, everyone's got a nice van now. Like we used to tour in vans that were like, probably not going to make it, but we got to try.
I think a lot of people rent stuff now, it seems more too.
Yeah.
You know, because I guess that's the thing when you're a kid, you're like, oh, let's just buy a van. Then you're like, we have this money pit now that's just like, unless we're going on tour constantly, we're just paying for this thing.
The first Terror tour we ever did, it was with Death Threat and Over My Dead Body, I think. And I rented a minivan and we took it to some like shady place that put a trailer hitch on it, and we pulled the U-Haul or the trailer, like rented a U-Haul trailer and this minivan the whole tour. And eventually I think we were in like Indiana, the engine exploded because it wasn't supposed to fucking pull that. So we had to like take the hitch off and call the rental place, and I can't remember, but they were like, oh, and it was also like a rental where you couldn't leave California. Like it was unlimited miles in California.
Yeah.
And they were going to like, you're in Indiana, we're going to charge you for all this mileage. How much mileage do you have? And I'm like, oh my God, 10,000 miles. So I went and it was on my credit card or debit card. I went and just closed my account. And so they couldn't like charge it to the account.
That's amazing. Like the stuff you'd had to do to be in like a punk band and a hardcore band, like phone dialers.
Whoa.
I tried to slip it in there. You don't see though how it's connected. You don't see like that they're, it's all like one world.
I do. It's just, it's now it's just like a joke to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really just the whole anarchy, Mohawk, fuck the world vibe. That's just not really my vibe, but I get it. I definitely get it.
What about like in New York though? Right. Cause in New York, you see how it goes from that, like to New York hardcore, you know, like there's a, you know, like all that stuff is like on top of each other. Right. So you can really see the correlation between punk and hardcore there.
I'm super posy, bro.
I know, Fozzy Scott. That's the other thing that comes up. You're like one of the only dudes that kind of existed in all the worlds at once, you know, like not that punk world, obviously, because you want no part of it. But, you know, the fact is, like, you Buried Alive would go on tour with Elliot. You know, I saw you with Elliot in Toronto, at least. And, you know, but you could also play with All Out War, and you could also play and do shows with, you know, Cult's Life or like, you know. You could be with all these different kind of worlds and it would still, you were the guy that could kind of be friends with everybody. I guess Josta too. Jamie's the same way.
I think you got to be kind of open-minded, you know, says the closed-minded anti-punk guy. But yeah, I loved Split Lip as much as I love Stigmata. And I wanted to play shows with both of them, and I wanted to befriend both of them and get in their heads and interview them for my zines and all sorts of shit. So, I mean, you know, too, like back in the day, Split Lip was as much as of a hardcore band as Despair was. Like there was not all these other worlds. It was just kind of like, is it safe to say that, I don't know if emo is the right word. I guess if I say post-hardcore, I'm answering my own question. But is it safe to say that everybody that started in the first emo bands came from hardcore? Is that true? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, 1,000%. Okay. Yeah. Like you look at like all the bands you brought up earlier, right? Like from Elliot to, you know, Quicksand to even Fugazi to it seems like it's always like a reaction to when shit gets too heavy, too violent. There's like a certain group of people that kind of lean into the emotional side and are like, okay, well, we're going to do this thing that's completely a reaction to it. Like even Lifetime, right? Like, you know, when Dan was on the show, he talked about it, and Ari, when he was on the show, talked about how this was like their deliberate way of kind of confronting how violent shows were getting.
On this tour right here that we're doing in the Detroit show, Never Ending Game played, Pain and Truth played, and I was playing for them the first Lifetime 7-inch, saying the breakdowns are as hard as Hatebreed. Now, maybe I went a little too far, but I stand by anyone that's listening to this, check out the first, I think it's the self-titled Lifetime 7-inch on New Age with the white cover and like a guy in jail or something, drawing. List every single song, you know, it's got the emo, RE, verse, chorus. And then it goes into these insane e-chug mosh parts. It's crazy.
Well, yeah, because they were like
crazy good.
Well, because like, and what was Ari's band that he played drums in again? Fuck, I can't believe I'm Dare to Defy?
Courage.
Well, after Courage, he did another one, right?
I don't know.
I can't remember. I'm blanking.
But I was really mad at you. Do you remember I texted you?
About not bringing up Courage to him?
I think he brought it up to you on your episode and you didn't know. And I didn't know. Like, how does this guy not know?
Well, because Scott, I learned. That's why I do this show is to learn. Every time I'm learning that, like, even Scott Vogel had a punk phase. I learned that on this podcast.
Oh, yeah, that never.
Dude, I'm looking at the cover of this tape, and it's a kid with blue charged hair that's getting stabbed in the mouth by society.
There's a picture of me my brother has. I'm behind a drum set, and it's a really fucked up drum set. It's like the way me and my brother got a drum set, did I tell this story last time?
Yeah.
Stealing stuff from our school. So it's a really fucked up drum set in our basement. Behind me is a poster of some kind of punk stuff. On the bass drum, there's definitely punk stickers, and I'm wearing a Slip It In shirt. Yeah. So
did you still listen to like that era of Black Flag?
I did because he did. And yeah. I was dipping my toe in and seeing what it was all about. But once I found the core, I was like, I don't need that.
But were you like a Rollins guy? Cause like later on Rollins became kind of like a, you know, a guru type figure for people.
The only guru I know is from Gangstar.
Good answer. Oh, that's awesome. So how did Buried Alive kind of come together? Were you like friends with the Hourglass people? Like, I know Despair. Actually, I've got a flyer right here for Despair, Union, Hourglass, and Pride again playing a show. So
was that the hardcore formal?
It was in Jesse Moscato's basement.
Yeah, let me see that. Who's on there?
Buffalo Hardcore Formal.
Okay, that's Despair, right?
Yeah.
So that's the drummer of Despair, Jesse, and also the drummer of Buried Alive. So I'll give you the whole Buried Alive rundown. So I don't know whose idea that was, but that's where Despair used to practice. Jesse's like, you know, dirty basement. And someone had the funny idea to play a show in there and everyone had to wear dresses and ties. So there's pictures of that. So Despair broke up. Even before this, because it ties into this, Jesse quits. He claims he got kicked out of Despair. I say he quit Despair, but he wasn't in the band anymore. And then Despair broke up. I think I was like, all right, Slugfest was a bust. Despair was a bust. I don't want to do a band right now. I'm just going to chill out. And me and Matt Roberts, who is the guitarist of Hourglass, also started Buried Alive. We started hanging out, like, just as friends. I think we both started enjoying alcohol at the time more than we should have. So we became drinking partners. So we were hanging out a lot. And I actually think, I don't know if it came first or after, but we got an apartment together. And he started a band with Jesse and Joe Orlando from Hourglass. And they had Buried Alive going, and he would play me the stuff. And if you know me, Buried Alive, maybe once my voice got in on it and my influence, it became a little more straightforward hardcore. But in the beginning, like, it was more Hourglassy and a little more squeaky and a little more convergy. I don't know if it's the right term. But they were playing me this stuff, and I actually, you know, they asked me to sing for them, and I went to practice, and I was like, I don't want to do a band. But I was kind of like, man, and another part of it was Jesse quit Despair right when I think we recorded our album Pattern Life or whatever, and he quit. And I was like, what the fuck, dude? So I was like, he already quit. I don't want to do a band, but I would keep hearing them and they'd keep doing it. And I was like, this isn't exactly my type of music, but I could tell that it's really kind of unique and good and powerful. And eventually, after a little while, I gave in and I joined the band. Everything took off really quick. Like I said, Victory was on board with doing it. We recorded Death of Your Perfect World. And what happened? Jesse quit the fucking band.
You guys were touring heavy too, though, right? Like, I remember Reach the Sky tours. I remember there was a lot of shows. Well, Barry, your second show was in Toronto.
Yeah, I think that the picture on the Buried Alive demo of me, I'm like sitting on the drum, like the brick that goes in front of the drums, or can't move and. With a Dag Nasty shirt on.
Right there, the Dag Nasty shirt.
Yeah, I think that's in Toronto. I think that was taken there at the second show.
I think that, or is it Miss? It was like Etobicoke or Mississauga. It was like just outside of downtown.
And I mean, I guess for me at the time, we were touring heavy, but nothing compared to like Terror's done since then. So, but for younger kids, we toured a lot, but you know, we were on Victory, so we got on some cool shows and stuff. But Buried Alive was, you know, we played a lot of shows to like 50 kids. Always.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the problem with punk and hardcore is it's like feast and famine. One night it's amazing. And then the next night it's like 50 kids.
Yes.
But that's why it's only for the hardcore.
You got to keep it real, bro.
Well, Scott, I don't want to keep you because you're on tour. You got to get ready for tonight's show and everything.
But you know, buddy, anytime you want to come back on here, you can. You don't have to wait 7 years.
If you want to have me back on to talk about stupidity and the amazingness of Fate's Got a Driver or whatever, I'm always free.
What do you got? I wanted to go through the Buffalo box with you that I have in front of me, my Buffalo 7-inch box.
Let's play a game.
Okay.
I'll rank them 1 to 10.
Against all hope, I think we have two versions of the 7-inch.
Okay, do you know that I'm listed as playing drums on that? I didn't play drums on it.
You didn't actually do it. You told us that last time. I think there's actually a good flyer in the back of this one. Let me see if I can.
That's a hidden gem, man. If anyone listening to this doesn't know Against All Hope, they're kind of like Dag Nasty meets The Descendants meets Iron Maiden, and they're fucking amazing.
Oh, check out this. This is a great one for you, Scott. In the back of this Against All Hope 7-inch, there is a letter sent from the person from Round Flat Records to Sean, who ordered it. I think I got this in Texas because, yeah, it's sent to a kid in Texas. But it is a flyer for Sons of God, SFA, Bug Out Society, Snapcase, and Izzy and the Vermin.
Wow, where is that? ABC No Rio?
Putnam's.
I think New York City?
No, this must be, this is Fast Eddie, Saratoga Springs.
Wow. Do you know Larry Ransom?
Well, not personally, but I've seen Envy a lot of times. So
if you can take a picture of that and send it to me, I'm sure he'd like that, because there's a, I don't want to say famous, but there's an infamous road trip that Slugfest and Against All Hope did together that we played at Fast Eddie's. That was the first time I ever went, we'll call it on tour, but it was an overnight show. And that was like, kind of like, this is the coolest thing. I'm going to do this for the rest of my life.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm glad I got this flyer then. I will definitely send it. And also, it's weird. There's two pressings of the 7-inch. I know you hate to hear that kind of stuff, but for me, that's fascinating, Scott.
Are they both on Round Flat?
They're both on Round Flat, but there's like distinct label differences between the two. And I think this belonged to Mel, Straight Edge Mel up in Toronto. Oh,
the female.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Cool.
I think I got it off someone who bought it off her years ago.
The white one with the baby on it. That's the one I know. That yellow one. I see that next piece of gold you're pulling. Yeah.
Same
that's
record.
That's the one I had.
But then on white vinyl, Despair.
Initial Records, Andy Rich. I love you if you ever hear this.
As We Bleed, I bought this from you personally, Scott, at the second last Despair show at the Elma Combo upstairs in Toronto.
All right. What did I charge you? $3?
Oh, yeah, you did. And I'm like, oh, wow, it's on color. You're like, I don't care. and then what label's on this one again? Oh, yeah. Treadwater Records.
It's a weird fit. The cover didn't fit correctly. If you size it up to other records, it's a weird fit. But that's a cool layout. And that was a dude I lived with at the time. You know the story on how that record got funded?
No.
So his name was Kurt, and he was a super vegan warrior. And we lived together in Kenmore. We went and recorded the Despair demo, and it was like 7 songs. He was a cart boy at Tops. Someone left their purse in the cart. He found $1,000 in their purse and put the 7-inch out.
Well, Tops never stops giving you hardcore.
And then he put out the Turmoil 7-inch, which was a gatefold on Treadwater. And that was the end of the label, as far as I know. the cart money ran out.
On white and pink vinyl for Scott Fax on the pressing of that thing.
Beautiful.
Then we got to bring up the Discontent.
Hell yeah. I just saw the singer Tom at, there was this sick punk show in Buffalo, Circle Jerks, Negative Approach, and 7 Seconds.
Yeah, an amazing hardcore bill.
I went to it and I saw him there for the first time in a long time. And I invited him. He's going to be part of the walking club when I get home.
Oh, amazing. We gotta do a podcast with the walking club one day.
I think so.
And once again, there's two slightly different versions of this 7-inch. I was going to ask you about this band, because this band never really comes up, but more metal, but Eternal Torment.
No clue.
Okay. I think they might be, I'm pretty sure they're Buffalo. Half Mast. What's up, Youth Crew?
Nice. Now, people love them all over the world. Very good.
That Plague whole with Rage, too.
Third party scene and Plague with Rage, they get a lot of love all over the world. Like, not want to say I'm surprised, but a lot of places you go when you bring up Buffalo, they bring up Plague with Rage. That's really cool.
Was that like kind of a different scene than you? Because you're like, you know, never been straight edge.
No, I mean, I went to all the shows and supported all those bands and would play shows with all those bands. It just wasn't my like friend circle. I would hang out with like Discontent, Against All Hope, Fade Away. We were all like the same bands, interchangeable members, and would hang out and fuck around. I'd never skateboarded, but and go to Denny's and do stuff like that. They were from like the Tonawandas. So it was like the same scene, but different friend groups, but never any weirdness.
Mm-hmm. I got to ask you about the OG Power Trip. Rest in peace, Riley, but definitely this was the first Power Trip, the Buffalo Power Trip.
Is that on Round Flat as well?
It's on Round Flat, yeah.
I remember the band, and I've seen them on flyers, and I don't know. They're out of my brain. I know I've seen them. I've known I played with them, but I don't remember. I may even be friends with the people in the band. I can't remember. But yes, love to Riley while we're here.
Yeah, love to Riley. That was a great tour.
That's a tour we did together.
In Power Trip. Yeah, that was fucking awesome. And I really miss him. That's like, it's weird. I think about that dude a lot.
What a world.
Dude, it's fucking crazy. Like, just we started putting out our kind of like in tribute list to the new record the other day, and just like writing down how many people are gone since the last record. It's fucking crazy.
That's one of the beautiful things about hardcore and traveling. You get to meet so many fucking people, but now we're all getting to an age where things start to fucking go wrong mentally, physically. I can't even imagine. Like, I don't want to think about it. You can hear where I'm going, but I don't think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's like you're saying, it's by virtue of the fact that we do have, you know, like all of us have probably more friends on average than most people, just because of, by virtue of traveling, sure. By virtue of just the way hardcore works. Like, you meet people at a fest, you make friends around the world.
Yeah.
And it's, the downside of that is, of course, the what we're talking about. But anyway, let's move on to happier stuff. I'm sure a favorite band of yours, Slave State.
And I know nothing.
Really?
Are you like an Eric Ellman fan?
Yes, I'm an Eric Ellman fan.
Okay, I got a new band started with him, so be on the lookout.
Is it going to be like a fast hardcore band?
You'll fucking see. Don't you worry.
I hope it's got some punk vibes.
Chill out, bro. What's Slave State?
Slave State was just like a raging Buffalo kind of like hardcore band.
What label?
This, I think, came out on a label from France, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, Sludge Records from France. But this was recorded at the Sims Sound Lab in Buffalo, New York, by Alan Sims back in 92, I want to say, 93. Doesn't say what on there. But
damn, out great of my band. Room.
Maybe you remember their demo tape. This is what their demo tape looked like.
Nope.
Speaking of Structure Records comp.
Hell yeah.
There we go.
Beautiful.
Got to bring up these two gems right here. The Slugfest 7-inch. Once again, on black, blue, and green vinyl. Rare.
That's a big one for me. That's the first time I was ever on vinyl. Chris Logan put it out, so that cemented a USA, Canada love forever. And yeah. And honestly, Slugfest was pretty cool live. We weren't like the greatest, but the 7-inch sounds really good. We got like a really good recording somehow, and the energy that captured it. So I think the record's a little bit better than the band was. And the band definitely died too soon. And I wish we could have done a little more because we were really starting to hit our stride, but that's how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely, a band that, like, I know last time we talked about it, you said you had some sort of mixed feelings about it, but the reunion shows, when those happened, those are shows that kind of just were legendary and kind of, I think, you know, illustrate a little bit of what you're saying, like a band that could have been due for a lot more.
I know you're going to pull out that fucking Village People record at some point.
Yeah, I've got it back here.
But I've recently, see, that to me is really cool, but I don't even really know how cool it is. How many of those are there? Like 50 or something?
I think it's numbered on it. Let me see. This was like, I told you, this is my signing bonus when we signed to J-Tree.
Nice.
Tim Owens was like, what do you want? What do you guys want? And I don't remember any of the business side of it, but I said, I want a Turning Point on Gold from you, Darren. And I want a Village People sleeve of the Zero Tolerance 7-inch from you, Tim. And that's what we got as a signing bonus. I think it's numbered. Oh, yeah. There's 100, 67 out of 100. But there's also the gold one, too. This is what I'm talking about. This means something to you and me, but to my kids, this is just going to be one more thing they have to get rid of when I'm dead. I'll say Willa to Scott. All this shit goes to Scott.
Are you aware of Cinderblock?
Of course. Structure Record Comp's recording artist.
Okay. So we re-recorded some songs recently and it's coming out. And through that process, I've been talking to Tim Redman some, you know, and we've made a pact. If Zero Tolerance ever plays a show, which I hope they do, there's like rumblings of it, but I've been really pushing them and trying. I'm like even trying to book the show, but they won't. They're not having it. If they play, I'll do what at my best. Slugfest is ready if they'll have us to play the show. Oh.
Would that be with Darren Pfeiffer on drums too? That era?
Yeah, ZT talks a lot and for what I know, you know, I'm not that close to the situation. They're going to play a show, hopefully. But like, I was like, let me book a fest. I'll book it. Like, just tell me what you need. I'll do it. We'll get it done. And I even was like, Snapcase was down to play. So that would be guaranteed like a huge show. Imagine if we could do Snapcase, ZT, Slugfest in Buffalo.
Oh, that would be, I will be making the drive down. We'll go to Mighty Taco. We'll go to the show. That would be amazing. Every time I see Darren Pfeiffer in Toronto, because he lives up here, or I think he still does, I would be like, Zero Tolerance rules. So he probably thinks Toronto has just like so many Zero Tolerance fans. Because I walk by him. Shout out. Well, I think that's pretty much the end of stuff. Like, I don't want to, I could do with the whole Eric Ellman subsection of They Live. Oh, what about This World Rejected?
Great. Joe Luca did the layout to that record. Initial put it out. They never played a show, but that's a very slept on record if you're into post Age of Quarrel Cro-Mags. Like, it's really metallic and really heavy. Like, try to find that somewhere. It's pretty hard to find, I think. Hey, you can't even find it on YouTube. But
well, because then all that crazy shit happened with a guitar player.
That was the end of Zero Tolerance. He's not in this band. That's Eddie Malone, who was the other guitarist of ZT.
Oh, and I thought he was in this. Oh, okay.
They put that out, and that's when Mark kind of took off out of Buffalo. They actually had a weekend booked. It was like Indiana, Louisville, and Detroit, I think. I'm sure Initial was booking the weekend for them, and they asked me to sing for them. And I was like such a Mark Belanca super fan. Like, he was, still is like God to me. I was like, I absolutely can't do that. No way.
You wouldn't cross those lines.
Nope. No way.
I lie. There's one more. The Watchmen.
Nice. This
record fucking rules.
Pull the insert out in there. Pull the poster. You'll see me walking in the pit in there somewhere with a backwards hat on.
Oh, look, there you are. That's awesome. What an incredible hardcore history, Scott. And you were the guy that kept it going.
The only one dumb enough to stick it out.
No, dude, the inspiration to us all. And You know, like there wouldn't, I don't know if there'd be a fucked up without you. Honestly,
I don't know about that.
I don't know. Mike, like Despair was like such, because Chokehold was gone and it was pre the Swarm. And so Despair was the band, I think, for us, you know, like that was like the big local band. And then Buried Alive was the big local band because we were so close, like obviously different cities kind of thing. But, you know, both those bands played here enough that it felt kind of like a local thing.
Well, thank you for all the kind words. Thank you for having me. And let's do it again. We can actually talk about Terror next time.
We got to Terror now. We finally made it up to Terror, the Terror timeline.
Well, you'll need like fucking 10 episodes to get through this fucking nonsense. Holy shit.
Well, I think that's the thing. It's like all your other bands are like what could have been. Terror is what is. And it's at the same time, you know, now you have to deal with the realities of the fact that all your other bands, it's like the relationships just fizzled out at a certain point. But now you got to grow old with the people in your band. And as someone who's growing old with the members of my band, that can be ugly.
Oh, God, what can you do? Live in a van with a bunch of dudes and see what happens.
Thank you, Scott, for coming on the show. And anytime you want to come back on the show and talk about punk rock, the door is always open. Once again, check out Pain Into Power. Check out Terror on Tour. Check out all of Scott's previous bands. He is a legend and a huge inspiration to myself as a vocalist. And very happy to get to do this finally. All right, on to the next episode. On the next episode of Turned Out of Punk, someone else who's just hopping off a plane in Europe as we speak, my buddy, my pal, Colleen Green is on the show. She will be heading over to Europe. Check out Colleen Green's dates on social media as well. And go and see Colleen Green as well. Go and see Terror and Colleen Green. I think that sums up why I love punk rock, because it's a genre that encompasses, you know, both. We're all here at the punk rock party. Some of us don't like to admit it, Scott, but he's there. He's here with us. All right. That is it for today's show. Remember, as always, Black Lives Matter. The lives of Indigenous peoples matter. We need to protect trans kids and help trans people protect themselves and stop hate and violence towards people of different faiths and different races and different nationalities, and just knock all that fascist bullshit out. Because the reality is, these are not political issues. These are just basic human rights issues. People deserve the right to be free and live their lives happy and free from hatred and discrimination. Get involved in changing this world. If there's organizations right now that are fighting up good fights, you know, get involved. Lend your time, lend your money if you can, lend your support to causes and organizations that are doing good work. There's a lot. It's all kind of overwhelming at times. When it does get overwhelming, try meditating. I know what you're thinking. You know, it's just another person talking about meditation. And I was like you too. I didn't believe in it. I remember reading an article about meditation on a plane one time. And it was talking about like David Lynch, and I'm trying to remember who else was there, but it was all these people talking about transcendental meditation. I'm like, yeah, it sounds like a cult to me. And I just did not bother looking into it anymore. And then I now have tried meditating, you know, just generic meditating on an app. And it really has helped me. So maybe it'll help you too. Speaking of helping, do something creative. Anyone can draw a picture for themselves. You don't have to show anyone. But if you do, go out there and make your own culture, because punk is a culture based on participation and getting involved and doing stuff. So start a band, start a fanzine, do whatever you kind of want to do. You know, choose your own adventure. That's what you do in this thing. And then, you know, maybe it doesn't work the first time. Try and try again. Look at Scott. Look how many times he had to build it all up again with a band. So go there. It's fun. I promise you, it's fun and exciting. And then it's not. And then it is again. And then it's not. You know, it's a roller coaster ride. Might as well try it.
Speaking of trying something, try signing your organ donor cards, because by the time they come looking for those organs, you don't need them. They're literally dead weight, and it can be a miracle for someone else. And I think that's it. Stay safe, everyone, and I hope to see you all soon. That was a weird thing to say. I'll see you on the next episode. That's a better way to end this thing. See you on the next episode. Thanks for listening.